Welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be talking about developments in the Middle East, particularly focused on Gaza and Lebanon, Palestine, Syria, the region. And we're going to be speaking to a real authority on the matter. And later in the show, we'll be talking to Tony Leo about that book launch, which is quite an exciting and interesting event. And so we'll learn more about that because there were many labor leaders present. And that exchange, I think, would be enlightening to listeners to the Taylor Report. But to begin, we have Professor Atif Kaborsi, Professor Emeritus at McMaster University, an economist, and someone who has grown up in the region. I know Lebanon for sure. We'll find out more. Professor, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you, Phil.
It's so nice to talk to you because we see so much commentary and so much information coming from people who actually aren't from the region and who go in and out and interview one or two famous people and then go home and write about it. And if you don't mind, I like to talk, just to begin with, remind people of the political framework that makes Lebanon a rather unique state and probably the most, I believe people say, the most democratic state in the entire region. And here they are in a deep crisis. We want to move to the crisis, but part of this story and part of the reason, one of the reasons I wanted to know about this is that at this moment, they're talking about the system needing to elect a president, and because that office is, I don't know when it was vacated, but and under what circumstance, but is there, and of course, there must be political agendas behind this move, either right or wrong, to put a new president in place. How important is the role of the president, and what is this issue about?
Yeah, it's absolutely a mind-boggling situation. I tell you why. There is tremendous amount of foreign interference in the political system. When you have 17 different groups, they follow different agendas. The foreign elements have found in this a fertile ground to influence and to intervene. There is a joke that my fellow economist, a great economist, Jeffrey Sachs, said, the only place where you don't have any interference or possibility of a coup d'etat or something is the United States. And you say, why? Because there is no American embassy. The American embassy in Lebanon is large. You know, it has its own airport. There's nothing. You don't find the American ambassador literally interfering in Lebanese politics. I was the head of the UN there. I was an interim head. But at one time, the Canadian ambassador, Jeff, his name is Feldman. He was the American ambassador. And the Canadian ambassador, we were at the diplomatic function because as the head of the UN agency, you're also an ambassador, so to speak. And he came to say, okay, I'd like to introduce you to the American ambassador here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked for a little while. And I said, you know, I'm very happy here. I am a proud Canadian. I'm of Lebanese origin. But I'd like to ask you, Mr. Feldman, if you were the ambassador of the United States in Canada, would you interfere daily in the affairs of Canada the way you interfere on a daily basis in Lebanon?
Oh, my.
Both of them got red in the face, and I walked away. it is a fact, Phil, that the Americans, the French, I mean, I'm surprised how many countries interfere in the affairs of Lebanon. And I would say, without any hesitation, that the delay in the election of the president, the president is elected by parliament. Mm-hmm. It's not the, he's not the, or she's not elected directly by the population, but by the representatives in the parliament. Mm-hmm. And the different coalitions of the parliament, each vying to get a president that answers and bows to their own agendas. And they cannot find a common ground at this. And this is now almost 2 years, 3 years, that we don't have a president. President is very important in the sense that he is the highest level of the executive branch. Mm-hmm. And to a great extent, the president influences the course and the governance system of Lebanon. So it's an important one. And everybody saying that part of the war that we're having today with the Israelis attacking, destroying Lebanon and trying to eliminate Hezbollah, which is a very representative of a political group in Lebanon, is basically to exclude them from any influence on the in the selection of the president. And they're saying now, and they have failed to persuade others, and the reality on the ground is Hezbollah is still there and represents almost a third of the population. Shiites in Lebanon probably are the major, the largest population in the area, and they all want a say in the Lebanese system. And some people are trying to say that part of the trouble and the continuation of the trouble in Lebanon is basically and fundamentally related to an attempt on the part of the American and their allies to exclude any influence of the Shiites and the Hezbollah in the process. That would completely is a formula for civil war and civil strife. And hopefully, because, yeah, despite the fact that Lebanon is a political democracy in many respects, we have had our troubles. There has been many civil wars and civil troubles in 58 and 63, 67, 73, and 1975 to 1990, a major civil war with a huge destruction and people lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so your impression is that the U.S. strategy is to see if they can recreate those conditions.
Yeah.
And get the Lebanese to fight each other.
Oh, yes, or to a great extent, get only the Lebanese, the kowtow to them, and support them to be in a position of leadership in the country. And that would not work, you see. Given the variety and the multi-party group in Lebanon and the diversity of the people, you cannot exclude a single party, especially when it's such a major part from the affairs of the political process of Lebanon. That's a formula for trouble, for strife, for a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Today we're hearing that what's reported, I was struck with this because I know the Americans are there. They exercise great power, and it's generally understood. But they've become very active and overtly interfering now. I notice that the U.S. prevented an Iraqi plane from landing in Beirut because they said... And it was the U.S. Embassy saying it. They have to land in Jordan. It was an Iraqi plane bringing aid to those who are being displaced by Israeli bombing. And so, and many people are, of course, homeless. They don't have, and they need supplies. They need medicine. So the Iraqis sent a plane, and the U.S. Embassy said, no, they cannot land in Beirut. They have to land in Jordan, so Jordan will inspect the plane.
Oh, come on. I mean, but that's the flagrant violation of Lebanese sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And this is probably a minor example. the U.S. ambassador really thinks that we are still living in the 19th century at the time when foreign forces used the, a very ludicrous situation, 1848, there used to be ambassadors in Lebanon from Britain, the French, the Russians, and every one of them sponsored a religious group. Imagine the British were the sponsors of the Druze, and the French the Maronites, and yes. The Russians the Orthodox. I mean, a completely, totally bizarre situation, and the Americans think the situation is still the same as it used to be, and they have really sponsored a group that they speak on their behalf. Look, I mean, let's say,
I assume the Americans founded an evangelical Baptist group.
Oh, I'm sure they do. There is one too, yes. But very minor, a small minority. But let me tell you this. Let's assume that the situation in Canada is such that the American ambassador would say to the Canadians that you guys, cannot elect a NDP government because it's social democracy and we only believe in conservative and capitalism. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the parallel, if not worse.
Mm-hmm. And further on this news, and I want your comment. The ambassador also said, "This is the United States ambassador. That they want to prevent victims of the so-called beeper attack." Who are due to fly abroad for treatment, they do not want them to be allowed to fly. So they're treating the victim of a terror attack as a terrorist. And that is not the Lebanese authorities saying that. That's the Americans who are controlling the airspace. This must be one of the nightmares. Actually, it's a recurring one for me. Whenever I think about it, people always talk about Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel flies over Lebanese airspace any time they feel like it.
Yeah,
they don't have that right. They just do it.
They do it, and they violate international law, the sovereignty of an independent country. And it's not only that they violate the airspace. Two days ago, they violated the water rights of Lebanon. They came by sea and abducted a Lebanese citizen, somebody who is a commercial, pilot that captains a ship, commercial ship, from one place to the other. Israel has completely violated Lebanese sovereignty, international law, on the ground, in the sea, in the air, everywhere, and is killing civilians. Yesterday, and I can share with you, a friend of mine who is in this southern village, which is primarily Christian village, called Meis Jabal, they bombed all homes. They raised the whole village to the ground. This is absolute criminal activity. This is terrorism by any standards. These are homes of poor people who are eking a living in the mountain, and they have really been denied even a roof over their head. They probably work their head off everywhere, probably in Canada, maybe in Australia, maybe in the Gulf, every place to amass some wealth to build a house, and the Israelis come in and raise the house to the ground.
Mm. Yeah. And again, there is international law. By the way, it isn't as though that there is not reports and records of all this. And it has come before the General Assembly and Security Council. Of course, we know the Security Council is tied in a knot. But these are not sort of random events that are forgotten. There is a record of all these, this kind of behavior of interference in Lebanese affairs, and which raises an image or a question about UNIFIL. Now, people in Lebanon are saying, who were there when the kidnapping took place, and it is a kidnapping because a foreign state entered another state and took a citizen, that people observing it said that UNIFIL personnel were aiding and abetting, and that's a common complaint of people in southern Lebanon, but and again in this one. What? How do they conduct themselves? Because my impression is that maybe they stand and watch while these things happen. Is that what they do?
Yeah. Well, that's, you see, under the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1701, UNIFIL was brought into Lebanon, and it's supposed to literally monitor and safeguard and pacify the southern border of Lebanon, northern border of Israel, and the entire coast. So there is a number of frigates and military assets controlled by UNIFIL that monitor and survey the entire coast of Lebanon. They came not in the south of Lebanon, but the extreme north of Lebanon, literally about 100 and maybe 40, 50 kilometers from the Israeli border, and kidnapped a student pilot who is taking lessons in commercial piloting. And literally, a commando group came in and kidnapped this guy from a beach house that he maintains in that area called Betroun, which is literally, as I said, in the very extreme north of Lebanon, so to speak, just a few kilometers from Tripoli, the complete opposite side from the Israeli border.
As this, by the way, I really hope that, and well, here's a question, I guess, and it's involved, because actually Lebanon should be seeking solidarity and condemnation of all the things we have just been covering. And will there be Arab states who will join in this condemnation and try to and to make this an issue between the people of the region, Arab states, and the conduct of the Israelis and the U.S.?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and the Lebanese are absolutely frustrated and very disappointed and dismayed by the fact that, yes, the Arabs are, especially the countries of the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council, that includes six countries. This is Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Oman, and Kuwait. They condemn, but they have done very little to stop and prevent the Israelis from carrying this. Okay, remember, I give you one example that frustrates the Lebanese. In 1973, the Saudis and the countries that export oil stopped exporting oil and said, okay, we will not stop this embargo on export of oil to any place of the world. And you know, the Middle East accounts for maybe 40%, if not 50% of the oil trade in the world. Until there is some peace and Israel will cease and desist from encroaching on the sovereignty of Arab countries. And none of this is happening now. And the Lebanese are absolutely and totally dismayed and unhappy, frustrated that their brethren, Arabs, and they are bound together by something called the Arab League. They have done very little. They may be offering a very minor aid, but they have not taken, especially Egypt, which can probably play a very crucial role here, has not really come to the table and has really threatened the Israelis that if you don't stop the genocide in Gaza and the destruction of Lebanon, Egypt would be involved. None of this has happened, and to a great extent. Not only failure of the West and the duplicity and hypocrisy of the West that has not come to the aid of a UN member who whose sovereignty and territorial integrity is being violated, the Arabs are, to a great extent, equally culpable and, in many respects, have turned a blind eye to the Israeli crimes against humanity and infractions of international law.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And of course, it hasn't been emphasized or talked about so much here because the West actually likes the idea. But there have been really notorious examples of Saudi influence in Lebanon, where they took the president for a private visit to Saudi Arabia and sort of roughed him up in order to get his attention. Maybe it was the prime minister.
It was the PM,
was it?
The prime minister, yes.
Yeah. But it was, that was a shocking example of the reach of these powers who are, you know, sit back as non-combatants while the people of Lebanon get hit.
Absolutely, no question about it. Yeah. But you see, we're still in a very difficult situation. Lebanon is an Arab country, a member of the Arab League. It's very proud of its Arabic face and its involvement. It expects more from their Arab brothers, and rightly so. And to a great extent, as I said, they're frustrated, dismayed, disappointed. There is a lot of room here for the Arab countries, particularly a country like Egypt, a country like Saudi Arabia, a country like the UAE, and they have, to a great extent, unfortunately, have not really been positively and effectively and, you know, what you would expect from them. They have not done what they could have done and should have done.
Is there a movement? We see it more and more meetings. We see more declarations. And actually, there was a meeting between the Islamic Republic leaders and in Saudi Arabia. That seems like a delicate relationship because the great power is the United States, and they're watching closely. But there, something appears to be going on there. What do you think? I guess we'd have to speculate. Will there be, that relationship survive? What's going on now?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, one, as you said, would speculate. But you have raised a very interesting point. It's not the Lebanon is not only disappointed with the brothers in the Arab world. Lebanon has a very large majority of Muslims. Muslim countries, there is the Muslim Islamic Conference, about 50 countries of the world. And these really, that includes Indonesia, includes Malaysia, includes Pakistan, they have not done what they have done. So to a great extent, Lebanon is orphaned, so to speak, because of all those, what I would call relationships that should have really protected Lebanon and had in the past been very active and protective, have to a great extent let us down, you know, in Lebanon. And I bet you that if the 50 countries, this is 50 votes in the UN, this is almost, above... like I would say, if you have 200, you're talking about 25% of the countries of the world, so to speak. And then they could really represent a very strong coalition that would have significant influence. The more democratic the UN is, as one and most of us are hoping that it would come, these people could be counted on to be a major force within the UN. And they have not done what I and many other Lebanese feel that they could have done. And to a great extent, we have no alternative to the UN. With all its failures, with all its constraints, with all its problems, it's the only institution that could convene the countries of the world and whose mandate, the overarching mandate of the UN, is peace, is bringing peace and avoiding a third world war. But if you keep Ukraine war festering, Lebanon and Gaza festering, I mean, the world is getting closer and closer, sleepwalking into a confrontation that would be totally destructive of the planet, if not just one country or two.
Yes, and by the way, that leads me to my next question about the here we are on the brink, if one follows the mass media claiming that we have an anticipation of Iran responding to the last Israeli attack on them, and with the little crossroads of where it is said that if Israel would agree to a ceasefire, that there would not Iran would not respond, and there's people are saying this, but of course one could only speculate about what that all might mean. But the extreme danger, it seems to me, and speaking to you previously, I get the impression that people don't quite understand that when they talk about Israel, they always make it Israel Iran, but it's actually the United States Iran, is it not? I mean, that we all know, and they've done it, actually. Eisenhower did it in 1956, was it? At any rate, they can actually pull a string, and Israel stops. So, and now they are saying, well, you know, if you do something to Iran, pardon me, to Israel, we will, we can't, we won't limit Israel in its response.
Yeah,
and when they say that, by the way, they're admitting, aren't they, that they control them, because they say we won't limit them. So they're admitting they could limit them.
Look, I mean, it doesn't take a genius or rocket science. The Israelis, without American supply of weapons and political influence and technology, would not stand a chance. To a great extent, this is not a war between Lebanon and Palestine and the Israelis. This is a war against the NATO, the Americans. I mean, look at the incredible supply of weapons from the U.S. All these bunker buster 2,000 pounds.
Guaranteed to kill the leaders anywhere they like.
Exactly. And the planes. And they give them the highest, the fastest, the superior, the 35
and
dealing with Israelis, you're be dealing with people controlling the Israelis, a mind eye, and there was a wife has really continued to support, supply, finance, and protect Israeli interests at the expense of everything.
It seems to me that among our work should involve reminding everyone who follows this crisis that the Israel issue, Palestine, was there before. Before there were any Zionists, the colonial powers were fighting to control the Eastern Mediterranean, or what they call, I guess, the Levant.
Yeah.
And they do control it, and everybody pretends they don't. But and they could care less the name you put on the building so long as they own it.
Yes. And you said a very important word, Levant. And now the Levant has become a very critical area. Why? Because they just discovered in the Levant Basin what about 122 billion cubic feet of gas and 1.7 billion barrels of oil. And all of a sudden, the U.S., the Europe, and everybody else sees this as a substitute for the gas from Russia. And to a great extent, the Europeans, the Americans, and everybody else is now condoning and turning a blind eye to the genocide, and it's because of oil and gas. And many people in the region feel very unhappy about this, especially that Israel has commandeered and maybe is in Gaza and destroying everything in this and trying also to destroy Lebanon so that it will have an exclusive monopolistic command over this rich new find of oil and gas.
Yeah, and by the way, isn't it, you know, sometimes it's you can learn more by listening to the devil than you can by reading the newspapers, but Netanyahu stood in front of the United Nations and drew a line and said, here, the oil will go from here and it'll go through Gaza.
Yeah.
I mean how much clearer could it be for people?
Yeah. I mean, you know that the right wing in Israel, and then to some extent, to be fair, is not representative of all the Israelis, because this right-wing government has, to a great extent, endangered the Jews all around the world, because now they are, everybody think of them as if they are following Netanyahu, maybe a majority of them. But this Netanyahu has literally exposed Israel as a genocidal army, is destroying everything its way, and is motivated by a very based and materialistic concerns, and totally undemocratic in the sense that it wants to have an expansionist system and a monopoly only for Jews, and nobody else is supposed to coexist there.
Yeah, again, and I'd say we have to thank the gentleman for speaking so clearly to us in front of the UN, and he likes to use little pictures, so there's no debating what his goals are. And, of course, none of that is achievable without Washington drawing the maps and providing you all the money and all the weapons.
And unfortunately, a corollary of this is the world inaction, indifference, unwillingness, Arab sitting on the sidelines. I mean, this is a very difficult situation, and in many respects, it's undermining multilateralism,
absolutely,
undermining international law, undermining humanity, undermining peace, undermining the capacity of this UN to bring about a peaceful resolution of these conflicts.
Absolutely. Well, Professor Atif Kaborsi, is very enlightening. We really enjoy talking to you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. My pleasure. You know, thank you in a very sincere way. I used to be on TV for every action on Middle East and things. I was serving in the UN. Now we are blacklisted.
Yes.
I can't even talk to you, as you can easily, and you could verify this. Every time you call me, they mute my calls.
Yeah. Well, it's a tribute to your what you know and your eloquence.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There's Professor Atif Kaborsi. I think we have some apropos music, and we'll be back, and we'll talk to Tony Leah.